Good day, everyone. Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, IMS12, Faster Than Ever. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and include a question and answer session. Today's conference is being recorded. In this teleconference, you'll learn new features and enhancements to IMS12. You'll learn how IMS12 can lower costs by extending IMS access and use with standard tools and interfaces. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our speaker, Sandy Sherrill, IMS Worldwide Market Manager.
Thank you. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this IMS teleconference. My name is Sandy Sherrill, and I am the IMS Worldwide Market Manager. Today, I'm very pleased to introduce Betty Patterson, IBM Distinguished Engineer and IMS Chief Architect. Betty's going to share with you the details of IMS 12, which was just announced by IBM on Tuesday, October 4. IMS 12, a new era has arrived.
Thank you, Sandy. Now let's take a look at what IMS 12 has in store for you. Before I get started, I just want to remind everyone, what I'm going to be talking about is what we have planned for IMS 12, but IBM's plans can change without notice. On chart 2, IMS, investing in innovation, continues. When we take a look at 12, we're going to see how we have modernized applications, we've streamlined installation and management, enabled efficient growth, and we have reduced MIPS to reduce cost. And we're going to be talking about a lot of this as we go on. So we'll start with IMS 12 overview and IMS 12 highlights on chart 4. This table shows many of the IMS 12 enhancements for the IMS database, including full function and fast path data entry databases, DBRC, systems, and the transaction manager areas. These enhancements extend performance, availability, scalability, usability, serviceability, and provide new functions driven by customer requirements. I will talk about most of the enhancements that are listed on this chart. If you have a question about anything that I haven't explicitly covered, please ask me at the end of this session. We will start by looking at IMS 12 database enhancements. The first one that I want to talk to on chart 6 is the DRAW OpenThread TCP enablement for CICS ThreadSafe. This enables DB control support for the CICS Open Transaction Environment, or what CICS calls ThreadSafe support. IMS 12, the Coordinator Controller DRAW OpenThread TCP enhancement, provides the option for the Coordinator Controller to directly call the DRAW and not attach dedicated DRAW thread TCBs. This avoids the overhead of TCB switching and leads to improved parallel processing. CICS Transaction Server 4.2 extends the ThreadSafe support to the DRAW by taking advantage of the OpenThread TCB support. The owner of the CICS application would need to ensure that the application is ThreadSafe. So this enhancement does require CICS Transaction Server 4.2. Now, if you're going to use that level of CICS with IMS 10 or 11, you will need to put a compatibility APAR on your IMS system, and I have those listed on the chart. Now, the CICS ThreadSafe enhancement is a database enhancement for both full function and data entry databases. We're now going to look just at full function database enhancements. The first one I'm going to talk about is on chart 8, full function dynamic database buffer pools. This enhancement allows you to dynamically manage your OSAM and BSAM buffer pools without having to take IMS down. You can issue online commands to add new buffer pools, change or delete them. Imagine you experience an increase in your transaction volume. This could result in an increase in IOs. However, if you detected the situation and dynamically increased the size of your buffer pools, less IOs would be needed and processing overhead would be reduced. Prior to IMS 12, you would have had to recycle your IMS system to pick up this change in the buffer pool size. With IMS 12, the overall system availability is improved since you no longer need to take an outage. Additionally, the total number of possible vSAM shared buffer pool IDs has been increased from 16 to 255. This provides constraint relief, allowing you to easily grow your applications and databases. More buffer pools also allows you to better segregate multiple databases across the buffer pools. The next chart, IMS storage pool enhancement. This is one that covers both the database area and also the non-database area. Storage for selected pools can now be backed by 64-bit real storage when that's available. these storage pools remain allocated in 31-bit virtual. So the storage pools I'm talking about are the IMS PSB scheduling pools, which are the PSB CSA pool and the PSB work pool. Those pools relate to all of our environments, PMDB, DB control, and DC control. We also have pools that are really just related to full function database processing. And that's the DL1 PSB pool, the DMB pool, and the DB work pool. The pools that could see the greatest benefit by this change are the CSA PSB pool and the DLI PSB pool, since they tend to be the largest pools at most installations. Customers who page fix any of these pools and have 64-bit real storage on the processor could see a reduction in 31-bit fixed page frames. The whole point of this enhancement is that it can improve performance related to PSB pool cast-out processing during the scheduling process. Today, if you have large PSBs that are infrequently used, they might get cast out after a period of time. If the pool is not page fixed, the pages for the large PSBs could be paged out. In order to do the cast out, MBS would need to page in the storage only for IMS to throw it out. If the pool is page fixed, then the page out, page in process would not be required for a PSB cast out. For customers who would like to page fix their PSB pool to improve cast out processing, this change would allow them to do that in 64-bit real storage. Next on slide 10, I'm going to talk about additional full function database enhancements. These are miscellaneous enhancements that we've added for serviceability, availability, usability, and several user requirements. The first is to display status of randomizers and partition selection exit routines. By status, I mean we can display load, share, or gone. Previously, there was no displayed status for randomizer and partition selection exit routines when full function databases are open and closed as a result of a command. This change improves serviceability. The next bullet, the optional DFS 2291I message, is a diagnostic message added for lock timeout advents, the user 3310 advent. This improves serviceability by displaying and logging information about the lock resource holder and timeout victim for our user 3310 failure. The RADCAP user ID in the data capture batch log record has been added. The RADCAP user ID is specified by including the user parameter on the job statement of batch job. This was added for usability from a customer requirement. The next item eliminates user 80 admins for OSAM open, close, and in volume processing. And in place, we issue a DFS 730i message. This improves system availability and diagnostic information by eliminating the admins and replacing them with a message. For this case, the database is closed and marked recovery needed. Batch data sharing jobs can now survive coupling facility cache structure access failures. The batch jobs will wait rather than terminate in the event of a coupling facility switch, and a message with a reason is sent. Serviceability is improved by no longer having the user 3303 failure caused by coupling facility connection or structure failures. High availability large database partition name reuse after structure change. This one means that we can free up unused HALDB partitions after a structure change and allow unused partition names to be reused as non-HALDB database names. So this is a usability enhancement. Reuse of local DMB numbers. This is really an improvement in how we manage the DMB numbers to be able to stay within the 32K limit. By now reusing the local DMB numbers, we no longer need to cold start if there's a lot of database creations and deletions going on, as we will now reuse the DMB numbers. So we can actually support the maximum of 32K. The last item on this list, message DFS 993I, sent to System Console, this is for serviceability. This particular message has to do with indicating that the PSB pools are too small. That's now sent to the System Console, and the message is readily available to all users. Previously, DB control users did not receive this message, so this now allows DB control users to easily determine when PSB schedule failures occur because of insufficient space in either of the pools. So that was the full function database enhancements, and now we'll move on to FastPath database enhancements. Starting with chart 12, and the 64-bit enhancements. So in IMS 11, we added FastPass 64-bit support for the data entry database buffers, and now we're extending that. The enhancements we have in 12 provide improved performance and functionality. For example, the FastPass subpools have been made more dynamic. They are now compressed and pre-extended. When the usage of a subpool drops, they are compressed, and when the usage increases, they are automatically pre-extended in anticipation of future needs, reducing wait for buffer conditions. In addition, subpool extents will automatically be resized if an excessive number of them are taken per subpool. Additional buffers will now be obtained exclusively in 64-bit when field calls are made, as well as SDEF calls, sequential dependence, during emergency restart, and also XRF tracking. In the area of usability, the query pool command has been enhanced to add a new show statistics parameter, and the show all parameter will now show the status of the subpool. So further enhancements around 64-bit for FastPass. The next item, next chart, we have FastPass data entry database secondary index enablement. So this provides the infrastructure to enable secondary indexing support for IMS FastPass data entry databases. This allows the data entry databases to be accessed through a secondary key sequence. IMS automatically performs index maintenance. The index is updated when a source segment is inserted, deleted, or replaced. The index database structure can use HISAM, that's hierarchical index sequential access method, or SHISAM, simple hierarchic index sequential access method. Tools or utilities to build a secondary index database for DDB to exploit this function could be separately offered by IBM or other vendors. So IMS is maintaining the index, but is not creating the initial index. Now, there is a new tool being added via an APAR update to the IMS FastPass solution pack, and that will allow you to create the secondary index for a DDB. The next FastPass item I want to talk about on chart 14 are logging enhancements. And we have two options here that we've added. The first is to reduce logging for asynchronous change data capture. So before IMS 12, asynchronous change data capture would write the before and after image log records, and these are the 99 records. Now we have an option to not write these records for delete calls or the before records for replace calls. By reducing the logging, by omitting certain records, it can decrease the logging overhead and improve performance where we've detected that those log records are not required. And this was a customer requirement. There was a specific scenario where they did not need these extra records and wanted to reduce the overhead. The next option we have for logging is to log the entire segment per replace calls for DDBs. Now, the insert and delete always log the entire segment. Again, it was another user requirement, but it makes it easier to extract segment updates for a transaction log database. And so one of our customers wanted to be able to log the entire segment. So these logging enhancements provide additional flexibility for specific customer scenarios. The next chart I have is on FastPass serviceability. This enhancement applies to a data sharing environment with data entry databases. We've included a new diagnostic message. So the new message we have is the DFS66I message. That's issued when a data sharing system does not respond to a notify message. So a notify message, those are things that are used to send messages between data sharing systems. For example, they're sent to synchronize the initialization of the use of UOW locks. These messages are sent by one IMS system to all of its data sharing partners. All partners must respond before the processing can continue. IMS sends a DFS3770 message if all partners do not respond within a time limit. But that message tells the user that a timeout situation has occurred, but does not identify which IMS is the one that did not respond. So the new message is going to assist usability to make it easier to determine which systems failed. So what you would do is you'd look at your data sharing partners, you'd see how many 66 messages you had, which systems issued them, because the IMS ID would be there, and the system that did not respond, causing that message to be issued, is the one that might be a hang situation that you might need to cancel or look into. So that is FastPass enhancements. And now we'll be moving on to IMS 12 Database Recovery Control Enhancements, DBRC. Chart 17 has got a list of some miscellaneous enhancements that we have added to DBRC for scalability, usability, and also more user requirements. The first one is to remove the 32K output buffer constraint for the DBRC list commands when those commands are entered through the Operations Manager. This allows you to use a single point of control to display information about databases with a large number of partitions. Because today, if you have too many partitions, the list command can exceed that 32K buffer size and your data is going to be truncated. So this is nice for usability. The next one, the cleanup.recon commands, the first of the commands I'm going to be talking about. That was added in IMS 11 to provide an option to force cleanup of old or expired recon log data and database recovery data, including image copy data. And that is now extended to also clean up change accumulation record data. So the cleanup.recon command allows you to compress the recon by eliminating the records you no longer need. The list.history command is enhanced to increase the timestamp precision. This is useful for diagnostics, as well as we've added support for other information, such as HALDB online reorganization number display. The next item, the init change accum, init image copy, notify change accum, notify image copy commands are now enhanced, where the vol list parameter is now optional if the data sets are cataloged. So the volume would be not needed, because if they're cataloged, we can get the information without that specifically on the command. The init and change accum group has been changed to allow a retention period, and that's added to the group max option. This allows the customer to specify the minimum amount of time that they want DBRC to keep track of change accum data for the change accum group. This makes the retention of change accum data in the recon consistent with image copy retention. GenJCL has got a couple of enhancements to it. The maximum number of user keys has been increased from 32 to 64. Then also the new keyword DB type is added, indicating the type of database that the recon allocation record is associated with. Also, we have added some user data fields to the image copy, change accum, database data set reorganization, and database data set recovery records to ease use by IMS utility vendors. The next chart, 18, we talk about database DBRC migration coexistence. As with all releases, it's standard IMS migration coexistence support. We're supporting the last two releases, so we can go from IMS 10 and IMS 11 to IMS 12. This provides a change.recon upgrade command in IMS 12 to upgrade a version 10 or version 11 recon for version 12 recon format. It allows IMS 10 and 11 to execute with the IMS 12 recon. And there are a couple of SPEs, one for version 10 and one for version 11, that allow the compatibility. And with every release of IMS, databases are compatible, and applications are also compatible between releases. Now we're going to be moving on to the IMS 12 Systems Management Enhancements. And on chart 20, the first one we're going to be talking about is Extended Address Volume Support, EAV support. EAV support has been extended to several non-BSAM datasets in IMS 12 to help with data storage constraint relief. To take advantage of this enhancement, you must be running a minimum level of ZOS 1.12. The supported non-BSAM datasets include full-function OSAM datasets, and OSAM datasets include databases, restart dataset, message queue blocks dataset, long and short message datasets, online reorganization output datasets, and then we have the log datasets, online log datasets, log write-ahead datasets, and the IMS full datasets. So these have all been changed to be able to support extended volumes. This provides relief to customers running out of ZOS addressable disk storage due to the 4-digit device number limit. So this is about allowing more data sets on a volume and extending the space that the data sets can be allocated on. So it allows more data sets on a single larger volume. And in some cases, this might mean less need for multi-volume OSAM, for instance. This does require hardware that supports extended address volume. So that would be a DS8000, DS8700. I should also note that we added support for EAV for vSAM data sets back in IMS10. So this is now addressing the non-vSAM data sets. The next one I want to talk about on chart 21 is the IMS scheduling log record enhancements. And this is a small enhancement we've made to a couple of our log records, the 07 and the 56 Fox Able. What we have done is we've added a new field to show specialty engine time. So the field shows the total time for the SystemZ application assist processor, the ZAP, and the SystemZ integrated information processor, the ZIP. This captures the usage time from the IMS applications in the log records and separates out the specialty engine time from the standard central processor time. This allows for more precise statistics regarding workloads that have been offloaded to a ZAP or ZIP. And this is one that several of our users have requested that are moving into the space where they're running more IMS Java, either in an IMS Java dependent region or a mix of COBOL and Java. So this is going to be able to be an enhancement for them for their chargeback capabilities. The next item to talk about is the IMS repository and its usage for dynamic resource definition resources. This provides an optional single centralized store for DRD resource definitions. The repository is going to enable users to have a single place to store the resources, where today, with individual IMSs, the changes are made to the executing IMS, and they can be saved out to the resource definition data set. But each IMS would have its own RDDS. This now allows you to have a single place to manage, store, and share the definitions. Now, these initially will apply to the definitions that we know of from ModBlocks, which would be the database, the application, transaction, routing code, and the related descriptors. The use of the IMS repository is optional. You can continue to use the RDDS, or for that matter, you could continue to use ModBlocks as you do. The enhancements, though, improve usability. They also allow you to make the changes once in the repository and roll them out to one or more active IMS systems. Now, we have a DRD user interface. It's a TSO ISPF application that we use with dynamic resources, and that has been extended to support new options for the query, import, and export commands that go along with the IMS repository. The IMS repository itself is a vSAM data set, and we've got a separate address space that's managing the repository. Syntax Checker has been enhanced to be able to manage the procedures that you need to be able to start the repository. And the Installation Verification Program, IVP, has also been enhanced for the repository. So this is our next step in dynamic resource definition, and I'm sure in the future we'll see more to come in this area. The next change I want to talk about around the import command is also related to the repository and dynamic resource definition. The import command is enhanced to provide an update option for updating resources. Previously, the import command could only be used to add new resources. If the resource name was already defined, the command would fail. The enhanced import command creates a runtime definition if one does not already exist and updates an existing runtime definition with new attributes. Database access must be stopped before the database definition is updated. This command imports resources and description definitions from a resource definition data set or the repository. The next change I have to talk about is member online change. A new option is provided for the member online change function, which allows member online change to bring in only new or changed PSB members with an init online change command. Additionally, new DBD members can be added as long as they were not previously defined to IMS. This can significantly improve performance where a large number of application control block members may exist in the ACB library. And this came about. We had some customers that had some very large PSBs that had a lot of DVDs associated with them, but wanted to make some very simple changes just to the PSB. What this does, then, is it eliminates the IMS process of determining all the associated ACB members for a PSB change and allows us to process only those members as specified in the command. So this can be a very significant performance enhancement for some users. The next topic we're going to get into is the IMS logger on chart 25. We have three changes that we've made to the logger, and the combination of the three of them are going to do significant things for IMS performance. The first one is old striping allows the online log data sets, and the system log data sets to be extended format, so you can optionally have striping for these data sets. This would increase the maximum write speed. This would lessen the likelihood of logging speed being a limiting factor and provide improvement in transaction response. So the striping is a good enhancement if you have a system that is constrained by logging today. The logger also now supports 64-bit buffers. This reduces extended common storage use. FastPath 64-bit support also is enhanced from this, because now when you're running with FastPath 64-bit buffers, FastPath can now call the logger directly in 64-bit mode, reducing the overhead of switching between 31 and 64-bit modes. So some additional performance enhancements there. And then the third item that's also going to help with the improved performance is the rewrite we've done of the WAD, so the write-ahead data set management. We have changed that to become more efficient, and that will further improve logging bandwidth. So what we've done is we've changed the way that the WAS writes are done. The concept of track groups is no longer used with IMS 12. And so this whole process where we're writing the WAS in a wraparound fashion, the use of the WAS then changes the calculation for the space required for the WAS and changes the data written by log ahead requests. So this could dramatically also reduce the space requirement for the WAS. So not only do we see a performance boost, but we're probably going to need less storage reserved for the WAS data set. So overall, a very good enhancement for us. So again, a couple of these parts are optional. It's optional to run with extended format support. You need to define that for the data sets. Striping is optional. You do need the extended format support to be able to run with the 64-bit buffers. But the WAS rewrite then is part of the base product that you will get regardless out of the box. So those were the system enhancements. Now we're going to move on to IMS 12 transaction management and connectivity enhancements. And the first one I want to talk about on 27 is IMS to IMS TCPIP communications. So IMS TCPIP communication has been enhanced to enable IMS systems to communicate directly with other IMS systems across a TCPIP connection using two IMS Connect instances. This eliminates the maintenance cost, path-like hops, and complexity associated with routing TCPIP communications between IMS systems through a third-party gateway solution. This allows remote processing for an IMS Connect to establish a TCPIP socket with another IMS Connect, and this provides for simplification and for growth. So this increases the flexibility of what your application can use by being able to connect the two IMSs. And this is also going to be used as a base for the next two enhancements that I'm going to be talking about next. So on the next chart, we have multiple systems coupling for TCPIP link. So IMS is enhanced to support multiple systems coupling communications between IMS systems using TCPIP. So TCPIP as a link architecture is important to customers who would like to migrate from SNA networks to TCPIP. So by offering an option for a TCPIP link, this new link type could be used to complement or back up a VTAM SNA network that's using MSC today. Some customers would like to move exclusively to TCPIP and eliminate VTAM altogether. MSC has been enhanced to support a new link type of TCPIP. Depending on the installation variables, the TCPIP link type can provide increased bandwidth over VTAM MSC links and therefore improve performance. The MSC TCPIP function also provides support for generic IMS IDs. This is similar to that for MSC VTAM generic resources and user var support. This simplifies communicating to an IMS shared queues IMS Plex from IMS's outside Plex. So in this environment, we are using the base function of the IMS Connect to IMS Connect communications I mentioned. IMS Connect manages the TCPIP communications. MSC manages the message processing as it always has. The structured call interface, SCI, is used for communication between MSC and IMS Connect. So we've been building out on our TCPIP connectivity. The next chart extends this again. Open Transaction Manager Access, TCPIP Connection Enhancement. IMS OTMA has been enhanced to support sending transaction messages from application programs running in a dependent region across a one-way TCPIP connection to another IMS system for processing. To simplify the definition of remote IMS systems as the TCPIP destination for OTMA transaction messages, the OTMA destination descriptor has also been enhanced to enable easy specification of the required parameters. So the one side, the sending side of IMS, would use a send only with ACK protocol. A remote IOPCB reply would then go on a remote hold queue and then require a resume T-pipe. And the IMS Connect that's doing sending would generate an IMS Connect T-pipe name, a generic client ID for that. So this, again, extends application flexibility and abilities to be able to get between IMS systems. You can have two one-way communications going, but it is an individual asynchronous flow. So if you need to go back and forth, it's two asynchronous flows. So moving on with IMS Connect, I've got some additional enhancements I want to talk about for IMS Connect, starting with the IMS Connect Type 2 commands. We now have Type 2 commands that you can issue through the Operations Manager API. They allow you to both query and update IMS Connect resources, and I have the resources listed on this chart. The commands allow wildcards and filters for retrieving Connect information, especially around sockets and ports, and can be routed to all IMS Connects in an IMS Plex. All the functionality available with existing commands and new commands that were added with the WTOR and the ZOS Modify interface are supported by equivalent Type 2 commands. But with the Type 2 commands, you get the additional flexibility and usability by having wildcards and filters, so you can just retrieve the information you're looking for and you don't have to sift through a lot of extra information. There are additional IMS Connect enhancements on the next chart that I want to go over. These are some miscellaneous enhancements that have been added for usability, availability, and more user requirements. The enhancements will enable customers to use IMS Connect more easily and also provide some better performance and diagnostics. The first one I want to mention is the XML converter. We now allow it to be refreshed. So we have a command for refresh, and this allows us to be able to update the converter without having to restart IMS Connect. The SOAP Gateway XML converters are loaded in the IMS Connect address space. And without the refresh capability, once a converter is used, subsequent changes to the converter would require IMS Connect to be shut down and restarted. So this refresh allows us to roll out new SOAP Gateway applications and application changes without having to restart IMS Connect. So it improves availability. The next item, RACF User ID caching, enhances performance and reduces MIPS. So we've had caching for RACF on the OTMA side for a while. This adds it into IMS Connect. We have a common cache for RACF user IDs across all the sessions that IMS Connect is managing. This allows the same user ID to be used from the cache across different sessions for any request. Additionally, an aging value can be set to specify the interval in which a cached entry may be used before it is refreshed. We have another item related to RACF, and that's to return the actual RACF return codes. This allows more specific reason codes to be able to describe the security error, and this improves problem analysis. Previously, what we would do is we would return a return code and a reason code to indicate we had an authentication error, but we didn't have the specific reason for the error, So somebody looking at that wouldn't know if we had an invalid user ID, invalid password, expired password, et cetera. So this now will return the specific RACF return code, so now you know what the actual problem is. In the area of diagnostic serviceability, we've enhanced the recorder trace. We're now capturing message data at new trace points. So we'll now get it immediately after receiving messages from either a TCP/IP connection or from an OTNA connection through XCF, and immediately before sending messages either on a TCP/IP connection or to OTNA, again, through XCF. The new trace points make it easier to identify whether a problem with a message is occurring in IMS Connect or elsewhere, and can reduce the likelihood that a TCP/IP packet trace would be required to diagnose a problem. The next item, commit mode 0, which is commit then send, ACK no wait for roll your own clients. This extends the no wait option to roll your own clients by eliminating the need to receive a timeout after the final ACK. So there's a flow with commit mode 0 where the last flow waits for acknowledgement from IMS Connect back to the client, and often that flow is not needed. So by indicating we don't want to wait for that acknowledgement, we can eliminate the flow, improve performance. The client application can continue on. We have a new read status for a client connection. And what this does is it really says we've got partial read status in IMS Connect. So while reading or waiting for input messages from a client, we could display the client status as read. Now, this is a transient status. This is not one that you should see in a normal case. But what can happen is the client application can send a message and not tell IMS Connect what the true length of that message is. So let's say, for instance, the length in that message is listed as 100, but the client application sends in a 50-byte message. IMS Connect gets the 50 bytes and says, okay, I've got more message I'm waiting for. So IMS Connect is waiting for more message, but the client application thinks it sent all the message and is now waiting for IMS Connect to complete the processing of that message. So we have an inconsistency, and that can result in a hang status, a hang situation. So now the read status will allow you to know that something's out of sync and needs attention. The last item I've got on this list is load modules for IMS-provided exits. We have provided load modules for some of the sample exits, and what we have found is that some of our customers had been using the previously provided exits that we had shipped to source, but they had to assemble them and link edit them in. But they were using them as is. They weren't making changes to them. So for a usability enhancement, we've just gone ahead and we've assembled the modules and created them as load modules, provided them. So now all you need to do is use these in the library, put them in the library, and we can use them. So it saves some steps there. Next, we're going to take a look at OTMA. And the first item I'm going to talk about is enhanced OTMA security. Now, this is an enhancement around the cache used for RACF for the ACEEs. This ensures that one and only one cached ACEE will be created for RACF user ID when there are multiple OTMA clients. This enables growth, reduces IMS storage usage and CPU cycles, and improves security. So the ACE is the piece of information that we create when we do the authorization checking on a RACF user ID. And so we previously kept an ACE for the client from each connection it came in from. So if you had multiple IMS Connects or MQ Bridge coming in and the same client was coming through all three, you would have three ACEs in the cache. So by having a single security element that we save, that means that there's less storage for us to search through when we're trying to find it, so less CPU cycles, and if you need to get rid of that client, maybe that client has now been eliminated from the company, you can more quickly and easily get rid of that because there's only one instance to remove. Along with this change, we have changed the maximum ACE aging value, and the new value of 99,999 seconds is about 11 and a half days. So that would be the default maximum aging out value. The next item I want to talk about is for OTMA and also AVPC, and it's for synchronous shared queues users. Open Transaction Manager Access and Application Program-to-Program Communication, OTMA and AVPC, synchronous shared queue support. Using XCF provides an option to communicate between the front-end IMS and the back-end IMS for the shared queues transaction for improved performance, simplicity of the sync point process, and resiliency without using resource recovery service. This new IMS option supports OTMA commit mode 1, send the commit, and APPC synchronous transactions that use sync level none or confirm when you're running in a shared queues environment. This capability removes the RS dependency for sync level none and confirm transactions. If you use sync level equals sync point, you do still need to use RS. But if you're only using sync level none or confirm through IMS Connect, or if you're using the MQ bridge, then you could use the option to not use recovery resource service. And what that does is just it simplifies the environment by not requiring that component, and it also improves performance. The next item is also related to shared queues, and that's the enhanced common queue server traceability enhancement. So in shared queues, we have trace tables that we capture diagnostic information. So these enhancements will help capture sufficient and valuable diagnostic data in order to solve more quickly structure event problems. We've created a new structure event trace table, and that's created to maintain TQS structure events such as connecting, rebuilding, overflow, structure checkpoint, link failures, those types of events. This creates two new trace tables to track structure events separately. So we're separating out the trace events. Because what we found in some of the instances that we're trying to diagnose problems, some of the events were wrapping. So now we have a structure event trace table. We have a structure overflow trace table. The existing structure trace table will only track the client request activity and no longer track the structure events. So by realigning the traces that we put into these three tables, this improves diagnostic support for certain types of shared queue structure-related problems. So that is a glance at some of the IMS 12 enhancements. I'm going to spend just a few minutes talking about IMS 12 prerequisites. And the first one I'm going to talk about is hardware requirements. IMS 12 does require 64-bit processors, as we did in prior releases. The one difference here is that we do now need long displacement facility of the Z architecture machines. The long displacement facility has been around for a very long time, and so that should not be a problem with anybody's hardware at this point. But by requiring a long displacement facility, we are able to gain performance by using some instructions that are available with that facility. Another hardware requirement I want to point out is around the extended address volume support that I mentioned for non-VCM data sets. That does require data feed that supports the function, so DS8000, DS8700, or later type machines. And the rest of the hardware requirements are similar to past releases. The next set is IMS 12 software requirements. IMS 12 does run on a minimum release level of ZOS 1.11. And if you are using EAB support for non-VSAM data sets, that does require ZOS 1.12. And beyond that, the software requirements are basically the same as what we had in prior releases. And that's going to conclude our discussion on IMS 12. And now I will hand it back to the operator.
Thank you, Betty. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a question and answer session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Our first question today, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. We'll pause for just a moment. Our second question today, with the level of technical information presented in this teleconference at the right level, star 1, if it was not technical enough, press star 2, or if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. We'll pause for another moment. Our third question today, what version of IMS do you currently have in production? If IMS 9, press star 1. If IMS 10, press star 2. Or if IMS 11, press star 3. We'll pause for just another moment. Our next question today, would you like additional information about IMS migration workshops? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Or if not sure or need more information, press star 3. We'll pause for another moment. We hope you enjoyed today's teleconference. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving information on the solution. If yes, press star 1. If no info is desired at this time, please press star then 2. We'll pause for just a final moment. And that concludes our survey. Thank you for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone phone. We do ask that you please make sure your mute button is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. At this time, I will turn the call over to our speaker while we wait for questions. Again, to the audience, it is star then 1 for questions.
Do we have any questions at this time?
And we've just had a couple questions come into the queue. We'll go first to Washtag Blonick.
Yes, I have a question. I got impression that I can migrate IMS 10 to 12 directly. Is it true?
Yes, you may migrate IMS version 10 to 12. Just as in past releases, we can migrate from the last release or the previous one. So you can go from either 10 to 12 or 11 to 12.
Thank you.
Again, to the audience, it is star then 1 for questions. We'll go next to Joe Schweizer.
Yes, Betty. Where do we go for changes to the recon records?
Changes
what
to the recon records?
Are changing what is changing in them?
You mean like in regards to migration and coexistence?
Just in general, what records are changing for internal tools that, you know, read those records?
Okay. So let me give you two answers. So the general one, if you wanted to be able to apply changes to the recon in regards to migration, then we have the SPEs that come out for version 10 and 11 to allow you to upgrade the recon so it will run with 12 and then allow you to fall back as well. Now, the second part of that is what has actually changed. The release planning guide would be able to have some information on that.
And if it's too sparse, where might we go?
If you're looking for additional details that is beyond what's in the release planning guide, then I would say it'd probably be easiest just to open up a PMR and ask the question.
Okay. Thank you.
As a final reminder to our audience today, to star then 1 for questions, Again, please make sure your mute button is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We'll hear next from Lauren Bernstein.
Hi, Betty. Could you just explain a little bit the difference between the 64-bit old buffer storage for, like, IMS version 10 compared to 12?
Okay. IMS version 10 is not running with 64-bit virtual buffers.
No, I guess they're page fixed in real above the 2 gig. You know,
we have the capability to have some 64-bit real, but as far as virtual, IMS 12 is where we're exposing the 64-bit virtual buffer. So that allows you to reduce your 31-bit ECSA usage by moving them above the bar. The other thing that does for you when we're running 64-bit, if you're running FastPath database buffers in 64-bit, now we can move directly from 64-bit FastPath to the 64-bit logger, and it reduces the switching, or the copying of the data from 64 to 31.
I see. So that's what's going on in version 10. It's going to 31-bit and then up to 64 and then back.
So version 11 is where we added the FastPath 64. So the FastPath buffers are in 64-bit storage in version 11, and then we need to be able to copy it to 31-bit for the logger because the logger in version 11 is running 31-bit buffers.
Okay.
So in version 12, then, we can keep the storage in 64-bit across between FastPath and the logger.
All righty, thanks.
Hello.
Bob Hovind, Mary Muthu, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hey, in terms of IMS Connect, I see only there are a couple of points you mentioned. Is there anywhere the mobility perspective you improved any of your features, or it is just the same IMS Connect functionality you provided?
Okay, mobility. Do you mean like mobile phone devices?
Yep.
Yeah, actually, we have been playing in the mobile space, and if you're going to happen to be at the Information On Demand conference next week, we'll actually have some demos working on an Android tablet showing connectivity to IMS from Android. And IMS Connect is a key part of that. We can connect anywhere to IMS Connect, and that is our TCP/IP connectivity for, you know, any distributed platform and also for mobile in the future.
Okay. Okay, fine. So shall we get a notification when are we going to have a demo or any webinar?
Well, are you going to IOD by any chance?
Yep.
Okay. We will be talking about it at some of the IMS sessions. If you go to Beverly Terrell's session, opening session, she'll be mentioning it. I can tell you when things are. We have one of our, in the expo area, we will have an Android tablet there, and we will be showing it off.
Okay. Is it only for Android, or is it open for any other mobility?
At this moment, it's Android only.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
We'll go to Joe Schweitzer with a follow-up question. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, Betty, in moving some of these resources, the buffers, the 64-bit addressing, that gets into the possibility that somebody allocates so much stuff that our paging packs can't handle it, and we get, insufficient resource problems for the system. Is there any way that we control how much goes there, that at that point it does something else?
Yeah, you mean as far as how much 64-bit storage you can allocate?
I could allocate a lot, and the paging packs will go to, go to a mess for us. We'll start getting IEA 200 messages about insufficient resources, people can't log on, stuff like that. Is there
right.
any limits to how much we can put out there that even though it may look like a good idea to allocate everything in the world with 64-bit addressing, in reality, IMS looks at and says, well, wait a minute, we got to protect the paging packs and do something about it.
Right. There's a couple levels of parameters. So for the 64-bit log buffer, you can specify how much storage you want. 64-bit in general, we have to specify by address space how much we're going to be using. And so MBS also has some controls there. And the FastPath, if you're using FastPath buffers, we do that dynamically. control the buffer sizes there. But there are some overall controls between what some of the IMS parameters are and what some of the DOS parameters are.
So it sounds like we do have a limit how much we allocate. Now, if IMS in doing this 64-bit addressing hits that limit, I guess there's a shutdown or an abend mode or something like that, or do they go to DASD with that additional requirement?
Well, I mean, if you're talking specifically about the log buffers, I mean, we know how many buffers we're able to allocate, and we just use that many buffers. More buffers allows us to put more in storage and get more throughput. We're not so constrained by buffers. We can have more that we're got in the queue rated right out.
So if we hit that limit?
We're not going to abend in that case.
You'll just slow down, I guess, is the answer.
Right, yeah, because the log buffers, it's a matter of, you know, performance tuning, how many buffers and how big the buffers are, and you control that.
Okay. Thank you.
And it appears we have no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the call back over to our speakers for any closing remarks.
I'd like to thank everyone for listening today. IMS-12 has got a lot of really exciting things in it, and, you know, we're looking forward to having it come out at the end of the month. If you are going to be at the Information on Demand conference next week, I will be there. I'd be happy to talk to you about this and anything else. We have a lot of other great topics at the Information on Demand conference as well, more details. I appreciate all your time today, and thank you for your interest.
And again, that does conclude today's conference. We thank you all for joining us.